All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. My guest today is Christine Walk. She's a childhood friend, and in her adult years, she's an architect. She helps people build a transcendent bridge from their mind's eye to the real world through her artisan's touch of commercial and residential design. She's completed some very impressive work, but that's not all she builds, though. She has an affinity for older homes as well. She restored a 100-year-old home in Alabama and recently moved back to Ocean Springs, where she bought a 1970s home. She's currently in the process of restoring that home as well. I love the idea of rebuilding. Rebuilding is exciting. When you rebuild something, you give new life to that thing. Continuous self-development is analogous to rebirth as well, and I'm fond of the idea of rebirth. It's one of the oldest stories humans tell. Reincarnation is found in theology. The phoenix is a symbol of death by fire, cleansing a life to be reborn by emerging from the ashes. The Ouroboros, the symbol of the serpent in a circle consuming its own tail, is also a symbol of transcendent rebirth and fertility. Christine stays busy, constantly rebuilding. She not only continues to build a beautiful home and a beautiful life, but she nurtures and develops life as well. She's the mother of two beautiful children. Her youngest joined us on the show. It was very, very entertaining. Christine's a person with a personality full of life. Her home exudes as much. It's a home of life, and it's one that's welcoming. The podcast was about her life and her passion for architecture. We had a great talk, and I'm eager to spend more time talking with her and her husband, Anson, in the future. Everybody, please welcome Christine Walk. All right, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Shop and Chivalry podcast. Got Christine Fury here. Christine, how you doing?
Hey, Brian, my name has changed.
Oh, goodness. You're so right.
No, it's okay. People know me better that way. I left here Christine Fury, and I came back Christine Walks.
There you go. Sorry.
No, that's a good thing.
I think I dead-named you.
Let's give Anson some credit right?
Fair enough. Yeah, I think he certainly deserves at least that, right?
Yeah, putting up with me.
So Christine, tell us about yourself.
Let's not get too deep in it, but I came from a military family, so I'm from a little bit of all over. But I was raised here in South Mississippi. The vital years, I think, of child development, I was here in Ocean Springs, still with some of those military influences. And then I ran away to Auburn University,
We won't hold that against you.
Hey, there are people a lot worse off. War Eagle. So went to Auburn. I worked and paid for an architectural degree. Let me correct that. My father worked and paid for my architectural degree, and now I pay for it.
There you go.
But I really blessed with that. So I am a licensed architect, and we can talk about that process if you want to, but it's similar to being a lawyer. You know, you have to make certain credentials, pass certain exams, and then you can call yourself a professional. So I am a professional architect in the state of Alabama.
Okay.
Commercial work pays my bills. But I am kind of dipping into that residential market here, being back in South Mississippi. The market's a lot different than what I'm used to. At a school I was in, North Alabama, Huntsville area. And so it's an interesting kind of trade-off down here, but it's been well worth it. So I'm playing with the residential market, got a few houses going on.
I gotcha.
And, that's what I do. I don't know if that's who I am.
So are you waiting to move your license over to Mississippi?
I'm working on it right now. And I should be working harder on it. I've been kind of putting it off. Mostly because as a residential designer, you don't necessarily need to be an architect. And I encourage anybody who's saying, oh, hey, I want to design a home then. No, please do. But do some research too, and you know, don't get sued and don't hurt yourself or other people. So please look into that. But no, you don't have to be a licensed architect in the state of Mississippi to design homes.
Now, when you say design homes, are you talking about? And again, you're talking to somebody who doesn't know anything about it, right? So,
yeah.
So I think of design like interior design. So you're putting on the sort of the trappings of what you want it to look like. But are you talking more of like layout of a home?
The layout of the home.
Like the structural layout of a home?
Ooh, see, there's a lot of like little trigger words.
Sure.
But I'm going to assume in the way that you're thinking, yes. And that's the scary part. Uh-huh. But it's also a very exciting thing too. That's why, you know, you can go online, you can purchase house plans and you can adapt them the way you want. But there are certain things that local jurisdiction will want to, have a professional touch on.
Okay.
I'll put it that way.
And these could be like, say...
like building systems, which would be like water, electricity.
Okay.
The crucials, the things that probably...
code stuff.
Right. The things that scare you probably scare you for a good reason.
Right.
Right. So, myself as an architect, almost you feel kind of, it plays on a different side of your brain because in commercial work, you have to be licensed and that's for the health and public safety.
Right.
That's to ensure that somebody is educated and can hold responsibility for your safety.
Right.
So if you're in your home, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I am, man, this is my house. I do what I want, mm-hmm. you know? So, and to an extent, yeah, you can do that, but they don't want you to hurt yourself. So there are certain things like, you know, if a stair goes up a certain height, it has to have a landing after a while. These are all kind of little things mm-hmm. that are available to you through code books. They're free. You can access them. But they're to an extent, yeah, anybody can design a home in the state of Mississippi if you follow the rules.
Gotcha.
And then at some point, you know, you got to get engineers to, and your contractor can do this. That's why it's so accessible is because a contractor can do so much now. But the contractor then would regulate having, you know, engineering involved, how much water usage you have, making sure your power loads are accurate, making sure you're measuring beams to be able to support what you want.
Yeah.
So, again, these are all things that can get really in-depth, and I don't know how interesting or how far you'd want to go down that with this conversation. Be happy to have it at another time.
Well, we can go
we can go
wherever, because I'll be honest with you, prior to you getting to the engineering part, my mind was like, okay, well, she must need to have a kind of extensive understanding of the physics of plumbing, mm-hmm. Electrical load and demand, and then even right down to sort of the thermodynamics of air conditioning. Like you've got 2,000 square foot space, so do I need an 8,000 BTU unit? It's two stories, so do I need another unit? Stuff like that. Like, do you go that in depth, or is that more the engineering guys?
This is... it's one of those, you know, every industry, every profession has those phrases. And what comes up a lot in the construction world is architects know a little about a lot. Engineers know a lot about a little.
Okay.
So I want to say the biggest role of architects, but the study of architecture, the profession of architecture, is so controversial. Is it a science? Is it an art? It's mm-hmm. both. What's bigger than the other? But I feel that the largest job, the largest responsibility of the architect mm-hmm. is management. I think it's our job to at times set aside creativity and rationalize and say, hey, we need to make sure people are safe and we need to make sure everybody's working together. So there's a huge part of collaboration in that. And you'll find that many people who went to school for architecture, they became architects for a bit and decided they hated it. They tend to go one side or the other, art or management or science. Mm-hmm. And that management part. So you'll find a lot of people being project managers mm-hmm. because, I mean, you get reach a point where you... like 80% of your time can be just managing people.
Yeah.
And for some people love it, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I like it or not. I certainly hate running a business, but I hate managing myself.
Right.
But other people, I think it's fun because the collaboration's there. There's a lot of opportunity, but in a traditional project, and I'm going to speak on the commercial side because that's what I know most, but The architect is kind of a liaison between owner and the contractor. And then you're also have this,
You're good.
You have this team behind you that are your consultants, and those are going to be your electrical engineer, your structural engineer, your civil engineer, your plumbing, your mechanical. And sometimes you get into audiovisual and a lot of those more fun dynamic engineerings. Not going to say more fun because plumbing can be kind of fun, but civil is a lot more fun than you think it is. But so it's a lot of management, and it can be exhausting. And that's when that art side of architecture becomes fun. And then you kind of dip in and you start playing with the other side of your brain. And it's this is you get away from the computer. Maybe you pull out your sketchbook, maybe some pens, and you just kind of work through ideas and play. And then you get tired of that. Right?
Yeah.
Like a writer's block, if you will.
Yeah.
You go, okay, and go answer some emails and make some people happy. So.
Well, good. It's like you get to access both sides of the brain at all times. You know, you can kind of move.
It's exhausting.
It. Yeah.
And if you have ADD, I mean, you could use that to your advantage for sure. But I don't think I do, but it would explain a lot.
So what got you into it? Like why did you choose to go down this architecture road?
You know, I always kind of knew, and that sounds weird. And my husband and I talk about this. It comes up all the time because we're opposites in that perspective. But I think I got lucky. This is going to be pretty bad and people are going to tease me about this, but, there used to be shows on TV, the little kind of design shows that I just thought were hilarious. And I thought they were fun. And my mom was always big about, you know, letting me express myself in my own room because she's kind of a creative at heart too. She's an artist. And so I was always rearranging my room always. And it seemed like every week I wanted to paint it a different color because I was just like, oh great. Now my bed set doesn't match. And so it was kind of like this interior design, or interior decoration, which are two different things. But it was, that always kind of played into my head because I could tell, looking back, I can tell it changed my mood. There are parts where I noticed, you know, if I put a chair near a window, that invoked a different mood for me. And I really liked that. You know, I remember putting my chair in my closet and I thought, oh, this is the best place to put a chair. Of course I want it in my closet. But why would I do that? Because it was quiet. Because I can control the light, I could read a book. Nobody, my brother, my sister, wouldn't be bothering me. So, and my mom thought it was the funniest thing. I had it, and of course, it was the early 2000s, so it was an inflatable chair, super cool. But yeah, so I think from an early age, there was something there, and then that began to develop. And we had the what was the career counselor in high school or we did some things in middle school. It was kind of
I think it was seventh grade we did
it's like career discovery
something
along that line
Every year we had some sort of like life economics type of thing, like skills for adolescents, you know.
Only the person like me would be like, yes, I'm going to think about what my salary is at 12 years old.
But that's, like, yeah, I know. And this is
because that's what we all did. We all went to the back of the book and we looked for what made the most money.
And the book being, so in seventh grade, we're consulting like a classroom of kids consulting the Occupational Outlook Handbook given out by the Bureau
of
Labor
and
Statistics. Honestly, it always stuck with me. It always stuck with me. Anytime I considered a career change, I would go back to that book because of seventh grade, you know, because of being in that class and being in that, like, in that book, because we spent a lot of time in that book looking at different.
You know what, Brian?
What's that?
That doesn't surprise me because there is one, if I'm allowed to have one standing memory that I can vocalize here about you, and I think you know what it is. I think it may have been my first memory of you. And so if so, your impressions are very strong. So what grade did you move here? What was the outcast, so outcast class?
Yeah, we were fourth grade, Pecan Park, Miss McKay's class.
Yeah. Go ahead. Okay. I was just saying if the baby was crying. Okay, no, please continue.
Well, no, you continue. Sorry. This is your story. I'm just trying to frame the time. So fourth grade, Miss McKay's class, Pecan Park.
That poor woman. God bless her. She must have been exhausted every night.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Miss McKay's class. So there were too many kids in the school, and so they took out certain ones, apparently by random. I doubt that because it was a very colorful class. And Brian walks up in here with this huge backpack. Now, keep in mind, it's third grade. How much stuff do you really need in your backpack in third grade? Not much. And Brian,
look, I was making moves.
Do you remember what was in your backpack?
Not entirely.
You were hilarious. He walks in the class and he sits up in the front. And he all of a sudden starts unloading this backpack, which had to be twice the weight of himself. And he
it was
takes
a rolling
out,
backpack, I think.
Oh yeah. Well, that would make perfect sense.
Had to be, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He had medical journals, like how-to books. He had huge manuals, which made no sense. And then he had office supplies, staplers, like probably a rubber band ball, obviously.
Yeah, you got to have that.
Tape.
I did, but I cheated on this. I actually wrapped it. I wrapped a softball in rubber bands.
Oh, so
it
you looked would. Bigger. You're too smart. See, at that age, it's annoying. And you're like, oh, this guy, I want to be the funny one. And you obviously were at a whole different level. But it was so, and I just don't know how that teacher handled the situation without dying laughing. Me, as an adult, I would have just like been like, this kid is way too good for this. Like, I don't know.
You gave me too much credit.
Maybe it was a different time or something, but she was, I think she was pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
She you were was. Always in trouble.
Yeah, always. in fact, in a last ditch effort to get me to behave, she, the principal, and I think my dad was in the room. And they said, "Look, we want to get you in the gifted and talented program, but you misbehave too much. You've got to behave, and we can get you in there."
Right.
And it did resonate with me for about 9 days, you know, and like, then I went right back because it did because I thought. Like for me, I've always like, I've never wanted to be stupid.
Right.
And I don't know
why. I don't think anybody really does.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's just, I saw people getting called stupid. And again, as a kid, it's low hanging fruit, you know, mm-hmm. but for me as a kid, I think it resonated with me. Like I don't want to be in that position.
Right.
And so I was always trying to learn something.
Right.
So I wanted to be in that class because you got to do a lot of cool stuff.
Right. It seems like they didn't really do anything. They just hung out all day and played games.
Yeah.
And the accelerated or whatever they called it.
Yeah.
And it's funny how that impression leaves on you too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I certainly struggle with, I'm just going to say this in case there's other people out there that struggle with it too. I struggle with always feeling deflated or failed because there's somebody who's doing better than me. And social media, I mean, we all know it's horrible
it's terrible
for this.
For that, yeah.
But yeah, I guess like, and it's not like daddy issues, but my dad was, he's a retired colonel and there was always this standard. And I appreciate him for that because I know there is always a standard that you should reach for. And anything below that is acceptable. It is. But to be able to aim high, you know, to have that goal is something that is important, I think, to achieve for. So, but, you know, circling back, it's a hard balance. And I commend teachers hugely for trying to analyze and fix that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
How do you balance, you know, reward and goal oriented education without making somebody feel stupid?
Yeah. Well, I mean, somebody unfortunately has to fill that role. Do you need to? Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry.
E6, yeah.
Hello. Hey. Hey.
I hope I'm not getting too deep and stuff. I get down a path.
Look, you're just fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah. You gotta talk about architecture.
No. Like this is.
When you remember the name of that book, I went, okay.
Yeah. I'm a sort of freak like that, I guess.
Hey, we're all freaks, and I'm putting lightly how like my ambitions are not healthy. Mm. You want to join? You gonna be a good girl? Yeah. Just fascinated with Mr. Brian, I know. Yeah. I think she should be pretty good.
Yeah. My wife told me one time that I have a face for radio.
No, I think you're an attractive guy. Hopefully she thinks so too.
But you have the charisma
for it for sure.
You think?
Yeah, I think you're easy to listen to, and I'm very picky with podcasts because people's voices. I think your voice is easy to listen to.
Thank you.
I have enough enthusiasm, but not like...
Not too much, yeah.
Yeah, like I think Joe Rogan's annoying.
There's certain topics that like really this again, like he wraps everything around to like psychedelics.
Yeah.
And then...
Why go there?
Yeah. And lately it's been like just the same stuff over and over. And with the election, it's worse, but... you know, now I just kind of tune in. I used to listen to every episode, and now I just kind of tune in if I know the person or if under the description it's something interesting. So, like, Brett and Eric Weinstein, they're, you know, one's a physicist, one's a evolutionary biologist. Those are great conversations, you know, so.
Yeah, he's getting big names then. Hi. Is this fun?
You're not bad.
That tongue. She discovered her tongue yesterday.
There you go.
Okay, well, we'll finish this then. And hey, I'm going to try not to talk about you now that I'm reminded that I'm a mom.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, so apparently children, their nerves are still connecting to different parts of their body. But for infants, their nerves in their mouths are already fully formed. So it's the first place where they get formed. So that's why they're fixated with their mouth. They put things in their mouth.
Pacifiers and things
like that. Because they're discovering things with their mouth.
Well, that's how you got to survive at this age, huh?
Yeah.
Except for you're supposed to start food soon.
6 months?
6 months.
Wow.
I grow monsters. She's like 97th percentile for her size.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Her brother was too.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, what you want to do?
We can jump back in. Yeah, okay. We can see how she does. I think she'll be fine.
Yeah.
I don't remember what we were talking about.
We'll pick it up.
We can change the subject.
Well, so if you don't mind, like, first of all, we've got another guest.
Yes.
You know, so would you like to introduce?
Yes. Please let me introduce my six-month-old, which is very fitting because, I'm a mom-trepreneur. So,
I think it's
a thing.
Okay.
I think it's a thing. There's like a lot of, you know, like moms who run businesses from homes. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of their coined, their coined hashtag.
It might help if you want to put the headphone cord like kind of around your shoulder like that.
Yeah, so she doesn't grab it.
Yeah, there you go.
Laurel Ann Walk is with us now, and I'm sure she has a lot to say about it.
Well done, Christine. Thank you.
I did
Anson
this
as well.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to give him a little bit of credit, but yeah, thank you. So, if there's anything I've done right, I think they might be it so far. I'll probably screw it up along the way.
Well, you've done plenty right, Christine.
She's still alive.
Yeah. Hey, honestly, like that's not bad. That's not bad.
It's really not that bad.
You know. you're the giver of life, and now at least as far as we can tell, the maintainer of life. So
far, so good.
Every day of that is awesome.
Oh, she discovered the microphone. Here we go.
Well, to jump back to what we were talking about, if we might, you know, you were talking about how you you're kind of driven and you might have this kind of feeling of failure because people are doing better than you.
Well, right? So even that, it's more, I know I can do better.
Okay.
And that's a hard one for me because it's, am I allowed to say like a cuss word? I mean, it's not really a cuss word because it's also an animal.
You're good.
But my dad, he didn't say this until we understood cuss words were bad, but he, you know, it's like, don't do it half ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, do it right the first time.
Yeah.
Work first, play later. Yeah. Those were instilled in my family. And to an extent, it's brought me to how I do feel a level of success today. You know, I really do. But, you know, we're sitting here in a house that's a job site. And there is a level of, can I be doing better so I'm not in this situation? And that keeps me up at night. And so there's a lot of ways that I kind of have to manage that. And it's become sort of an anxiety as I get older. But
well, look, I see this from this perspective. If you see in your mind's eye or somebody else and you think, I can do that, you've got a target. You've got a goal. Now, the fact that you have a fear of failure, well, you've got something to avoid, and that's the right place to be, I think, is in a position where you're avoiding a hell that you know is possible, and also in a position where you can see something attainable that you can reach. So I think you're in a great spot because you realize that a lot of people have these false views of their potential in the first place,
right.
And they have no reason to run away from their life of
content.
Well, the very real possibility of making their life worse, you know, and so they kind of lie to themselves about that, but that's not you.
You're would love to feel content.
Well, you're in a constant state of transformation, like we all should be. We all should be because you know,
it makes you feel alive for sure.
You know what? Yeah. You're not perfect the way you are. There's always something that you can change about yourself that can keep you a little farther away,
Brian?
From hell. I'm saying generally, but like me, I can think of, you know, 20, 30 things that I could do marginally different to make my life a little better and less worse off.
But when do you stop?
You're not supposed to. We're built for survival. Everything about us is built for survival. It's built for transcending conditions that are designed to kill us. So we constantly have to be doing that. And then as you get older, right, when you're more frail, and we talked about this a bit whenever we were getting set up, but like, you know, with the things we personify and then we make them frail, it makes sense because a person is frail as they get older. And the way you combat that is you spend a lifetime of building community and building relationships to where you're stronger as a community. And that community has a vested interest in your life.
See, that's why you have kids.
Oh, for sure.
I guess so.
Well, there's a utility in that, obviously.
It's like, I wipe your butt. Now you have to wipe mine.
But that's such a cool thing.
It really is. It really is.
You know, because
I'm glad you said that.
You know, you grow up and this child, the way you come in is, and that's the joke. The way you come in is the way you're going to go out with, you know, with a diaper and someone, you know, wiping your ass. So
please put me down at that point.
But yeah, it's true. So I understand having a military background, why somebody has that feeling of like it's order first. Things have to get organized and maintained, but there's also a balance, like maybe a little bit of chaos is a good thing.
And that's where Anson comes in. And the funny thing is that he's in the military.
Is interesting that you're creative, but you're more orderly. He's more like rational. And maybe he's less, is that?
No.
Okay.
He is the free spirit. So, you know, like you take those little personality exams.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he's free spirit. He's all the way on the other side of the spectrum. And I'm the...
Is he very right-brained?
I always get those mixed up. So, which one's right, which one's
left? Well, which is he, and I'll tell you.
Okay, he's free spirit. He's unpredictable. I don't want to say he holds his feelings on his shoulders, but he does care about other people and what they think. He's non-confrontational. That's the proper. He would rather have everybody happy.
Okay.
He's kind of a hippie.
Gotcha.
But he also has this side of him. I mean, he was an Eagle Scout. He enlisted in the Marines as soon as he graduated high school, and decided to, well, it was Marine, it was the reserves as well. So he did that while he was in college. So there's this organized ambition and drive to him as well. But definitely the overriding, the 75% of him, he would rather be Bear Grylls out in the middle of nowhere, like living off of bugs and moss. And
so let me ask this, in because emotions and creativity are not necessarily the same things. They come from different parts of the brain, but you can be left-brained or right-brained about emotions. And so, because like every part of your brain, where it's the, you know, the limbic part of the brain, the you know, any part of the brain, there's a left and right side of it. And so you can be a left side or right side of an emotion. And so, let's say, for example, with regard to creativity, is he very creative or is he less creative?
He's an idea guy, and I think he's creative in that respect. He's an idea guy, and I come in and say, "Oh, that's not gonna work." Or
okay, so then yeah, he might be more right-brained. Right-brained people are the more creative, and so like if you're with regard to emotions, if you're right-brained with your emotion, with your emotions, you probably have a wider range of emotions, but you also probably have a difficulty explaining them
right
very well.
Oh, I definitely can't explain my emotions, but that's because I bottle them up and I don't want anybody to see them.
Well, you're also wired to not be able to do that.
Right.
So the emotions come from like the limbic part of the brain, and they have a capacity for voice, and that's the mammalian part of the brain, because you had your reptilian brain, and that's, you know, makes your body processes work. And then the next thing that developed was the mammalian brain, and that includes like the limbic system, but it has a capacity for voice but not language. So that's why you can yell when you're unhappy, or children, they can't articulate words because that part of the brain hasn't developed, but they can vocalize, they can something. Yeah.
How do you know all this?
You know those medical journals?
You actually read them? Oh, poor Mary.
Oh, yeah. She has no capacity for listening to that stuff.
She's known you long enough. She knew what she got into.
but yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it is interesting. Cause Anson is, he's not what I thought I was supposed. He wasn't who I thought my soulmate was supposed to be.
Really?
Yeah. We joke about it all the time. When we met, I was not in the mindset to kind of share my life with anybody. Mm-hmm. I was in the mindset of taking care of myself and trying to get myself established and secure. We met through a mutual friend, and he was supposed to set me up with his roommate. He was like, "Oh, dude, you gotta meet her." And so, and he was like, "No, I'm not interested." And then Anson's like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm gonna jump in then." And so the funny thing is, he reached out to me on Facebook after we had met mutually. And the first thing he says on Facebook Messenger was, "I have a great place that I want to show you." That's creepy.
That's a bit creepy.
And you know what, Brian? The place he wanted to show me was out in the middle of the woods. Luckily, it rained that day. But I mean, I was at work hello. I was at work that day, and my office mate, I said, "Hey, should I, you know, look into this? I think he's a nice guy." So we Facebook stalked, of course. And I was like, "Well, he's a Boy Scout. Can't be that bad." And I was like, "Oh, great. He's a jarhead. This could be real bad."
He obviously knows how to hide a body.
He knows how to hide a body. Well, the Boy Scouts probably could do that too. Yeah. But no, sorry, Boy Scouts, you're pure and wonderful people. But I took a risk and I said, "Okay." And it rained. Thank goodness it rained that day. So we ended up, I was really into beer at this time. And so I was like, "Hey, let's go get some beer and just hang out in your house." So we drank beer in his garage and got drunk. And we left. Yeah. And funny thing is, like, then we just poured all of our baggage on the table. And then at that point, I was like, "Okay." So at this point, I was like, "This is probably going to be the best friend I've ever had in my life." And he was already thinking marriage. It was hilarious. My mom came up, this was when I was up in Huntsville. My mom came to visit me, and the three of us went out to dinner and drinks. And I guess I went to the bathroom or something. And my mom looks at Anson and says, "Slow down."
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
He didn't, because nobody listens to my mom. No, I'm just kidding. My mom's always right. But yeah, so he latched on and he didn't let go until he won. So here we are.
Nice.
Two kids, one dog.
Well, you've got a beautiful family, and
Thank you. And
it's been really great to be able to watch this, because as you're talking about this, I'm going through the images in my mind that I remember you sharing on Facebook, and it was very much a lot of this and this kind of this very sort of natural way of hanging out and connecting with each other. And of mm-hmm. course, it was an odd bond that y'all had over beer, because yeah. I remember seeing a lot of these things like, it's a weird thing, but kind of rad, you know, like it's kind of unusual.
Okay. I'm going to say this without sounding like an alcoholic. I love drinking. Yeah. I love drinks.
There's all sorts of reasons why you should.
Right? Everything started over a drink. But it's, I do. And not to go down that path, but I can if other people want to talk to me about it, be happy to. I was married straight out of college, and the marriage didn't work out. And so I had a very lonely time for a while, and I needed friends because I didn't know anybody where I was except for my coworkers. And somebody had mentioned they needed a graphic design project done. I was like, oh, I can mess around with those programs. And mm-hmm. so it turned out to be a beer festival.
Oh.
It was the Rocket City Beer Fest, which is an awesome, awesome beer fest. Huge, huge beer community up there. And I just got sucked in. Mm-hmm. I was part of Free the Hops, which is an advocacy group for beer in the state of Alabama. I became what they call the blue shirt, which are kind of like board members, I guess, committee mm-hmm. members of the group. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with it. Beer tastings, people would travel the world and bring home beer, and you get to try them right there in their home. Or we would go to a local tap room or brewery, yeah. and you knew the guys making the beer. Yeah. It was just so fun, and I just was hooked. I was hooked. And then Anson just jumped in right in the height of that. And, you know, maybe that was part of the intrigue. Is like, oh, she likes beer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is my in.
Well, it's a rare thing, you know? Like, yeah. you might be looking at it like, and I'm sure, like, any one of his guy friends would have said, like, you're involved with a potential lifetime drinking buddy.
Oh, yes. And you know, we will forever be that. Yeah.
That can be. And what's great about this is, like, you talked about the first day, how you kind of laid things out on the table. So you also have a drinking buddy that you can get really vulnerable with. Mm-hmm. That's pretty powerful.
It is powerful. Yeah, there's definitely strength in that. But we just got in, and, you know, it became, we moved outside of town, and we kind of lost a lot of that sense of community with the beer world. And then we've recently just gotten into wine. In fact, I've been posting, people have been asking what I've been drinking. And so I was like, well, I'll just put it on my Facebook story. And then people have actually been really intrigued by that.
Yeah.
I can't afford to keep that up unless y'all want to just send me wine and I'll taste it for you. But, our wine cooler, yes, I have one, because we do drink that much. And nothing is more disappointing than having a nice bottle of wine or beer and it go bad on you. I can't. It's
look,
money down the drain.
I've never run into that problem.
Oh.
Because it doesn't stay very long.
Good point. That's why mine's empty right now. But yeah, so we love drinking. We like drinks. I might need to get her a bottle, if that's okay.
Okay, yeah, yeah, we can do that, no problem.
Okay.
You need to do that now?
Yes.
All right. So I think the last thing we were talking about is, you know, kind of discovering the underworld of the...
Of alcohol.
Of the beer community, right?
Yeah, and they are good people. They really... I mean, all people are good people, I guess. But if you find a sense of community like that, people who really look after you when you're having a hard time.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, to this day, like, I don't keep in touch with them, but I know if any of those people needed something, I would be there, help them out.
The sort of proclivity for where community is sort of kind of intrinsic in what it means to be like mm-hmm. human, you know? So again, it's so cool to find these groups because within that as well, as you develop, kind of lineage in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think that's pretty natural too. I mean, you know, within this group of brewers, you got somebody who has discovered brewing and encountered problems and, that maybe somebody else hasn't, but now mm-hmm. you get to share that experience, which only makes you better and refines the craft right. even more. So,
yeah. And as we speak, we have a beer in the other room.
Oh, really?
That's yeah. It's okay. in secondary fermentation, which you don't always have to do, but Anson likes to do it just because it clears the beer up a little bit and helps the flavors develop. But, yeah, it's like it's very much basic white girl beer. I mean, it's not like we have natural, what is it? The natural ice or whatever, Smirnoff, but it's a pumpkin spice latte porter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it, so what kind of beer is it? Is it Pilsner?
It's a porter.
Porter. Okay.
Yeah. So, similar to like just a dark beer, yeah, if you will. Yeah. So it should be good. I'm interested.
Do y'all shoot for any, is there any sort of consistent thing that you guys shoot for? Like, is it an alcohol content level or anything? Or
I told Anson, I said, I don't want this one to be strong. He has a knack for making things way too strong. He's very good at making cider, which not like what you think, not, what are the real popular ones right now? Woodchuck, not the real mm-hmm. sweet, sugary apple
like
juice.
Like a real cider, yeah.
Like real cider, yeah. Like European cider.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking back to when we were up in North Alabama, we had these neighbors and I was like, oh, Anson brewed some cider, let's drink it. And it was champagne.
Really?
At that point.
Yeah.
It was like 14, 15%. And we were drinking it like it was... like it was natty ice.
Yeah.
It was just, but it was so, it's very good. It's dry
uh-huh.
and it drinks like a champagne. It really does.
Interesting.
And yeah, so my family, we love champagne. When we go to my parents' house, we're always drinking champagne for some reason, but,
because,
and it's not,
you know,
classy
purple.
Stuff. Like, I mean, it's yeah, purple. I mean, it's Cook's, like,
yeah.
but if you're wondering why the liquor stores are out of Cook's, it's because, you know, we've got like three cases at our house. Sorry. But yeah, we like our mimosas skinny.
gotcha.
But, but yeah, so he's very good at brewing cider.
Okay.
They always tend to be too strong. And I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but.
Dog sees something up there.
Yeah, that's probably nothing. Now I lost track. But yeah, so I told him, I was like, keep the alcohol level a little bit lower. And he did. So it's, you pretty much just kind of stop the fermentation a little bit earlier. But it should be, it'll be normal.
I've heard that a higher alcohol content can cut out flavor. Like mm-hmm. like there's a flavor trade-off in there.
Well, yeah, because a lot of the flavoring agents, they're, well, that would be incorrect, what I was going to say. But because you're developing flavor with the yeast, and the more mm-hmm. the yeast eats, its byproduct is the alcohol. So the more it eats, it's developing a flavor, but then you remove it to clean it for the fermentation. Other people could explain it a lot better than okay. me. I understand the process in my head, but
it
I
almost
can't
sounds counterintuitive,
it.
You know,
it
with
does,
that. Yeah, because
to an
you're
extent.
Consuming. So well, you've got to consume in order to build flavor, but then the excretion of alcohol will reduce the flavor. So it's
more
almost
of,
like a paradox.
Right. So well, at some point you have to stop flavoring it, I mm-hmm. guess is what I'm trying to say. So like, for example, wine. Wine is a very simple process, right? So you've got grapes. And those grapes develop flavor as they grow, but then you can kind of intensify that flavor and you can alter it during its fermentation process.
Okay.
And so with wine, you know, you juice them and that's all you need. You can take the natural yeast from the air or within the fruit and let that yeast is going to eat the sugars. And then the byproduct of that is your alcohol. And I'm simplifying this
very much. Is it that when you stop feeding them, you've stopped the flavor and now the yeast are kind of going to excrete what they've consumed but not take any more in, so
well,
you get the alcohol? The alcohol comes after the flavor?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because there's all kinds of ways you can complicate it. You sure. know, you can add oak barrels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, bourbon. Bourbon is bourbon because of its aging process.
Yeah, Zach Ducote, Shout out to Zach. He was explaining this as well in our.
And he's probably better at explaining it than I am.
In our last podcast. We had some bourbon on that podcast. it was my first episode. Well, it was my first episode with alcohol, but also it was my first time having bourbon. I'd never had.
What?
Yeah. Been all over Europe. Never tried
bourbon.
It's
very sweet. Mm-hmm. But it's just, yeah. I mean, I'm not a big liquor person. I appreciate it, but mm-hmm. You're not going to find me drinking it all the time.
Right.
Do you need to try and get them satisfied?
It's up
Are they
to you.
Bothering you?
No. I'm good.
Okay, but yeah, my first thought was, oh, Brian's coming over. Oh, I should have something for him to drink. And of course, I drank it all. You know, like everything's gone.
Look, I'm not offended that at 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, we're not drinking.
There's something for any time of day, Brian.
That's true. But well, look, let's dive more back into because. We got off topic about architecture, you know? So
I do that.
I think it's so easy to get off track on this thing. So we were talking about what got you into it, right?
Right.
And I think the last we talked about was that you felt like you've just always kind of had that feeling. You know, you talked about things you did as a kid, and then, but when did that hone in on architecture? Like, because it sounds like, well, you had a knack for design and you were fairly creative and you wanted to create order and stuff. So how did that hone in on architecture?
Because my dad was paying the bill.
Oh, I gotcha.
So put it on, purely honest, I knew I wanted to be in the design world and I thought that was interior design. And, you know, I do to an extent, a lot of my work is heavy on interior design. And as an architect, you can practice interior design, but... there was a point where I had to choose, you know, you get into high school and you're like, where am I going? What am I doing? And how am I going to get there? Right.
The eternal question, right?
Right. And so, my dad made a deal. He said, I will pay for your first year of college, figure out the rest. And so I was like, okay, well then how do I do that? And being, you know, my dad made enough money to where a lot of grants and scholarships and financial aid just wasn't available. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I felt like a bottom feeder. I was kind of looking around, you know, I was an okay student, you know, I was maybe an A-, B+. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely more kind of a hands-on, nothing really excited me in school. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of us could say that, you know, as an adult, you find things that excite you more than school did. But, so it was kind of like, how do I do it? And so Miss Garrison, is that her name?
There's a Miss Garrison.
Garrison. Yeah. 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 Caroline and Elisa's mom. Yep. She helped me. She said, okay, this is what you want to do. Let me do some research. I'll come back to you. Big help. She said, there's a program called Interior Architecture. It's a specialized program. They have it at Auburn University and you can go there with an in-state tuition if you get into that program, because your state's Mississippi, I guess the schools that are considered in-state where we lived, because USA, LSU, those are some, they don't offer that program. Mm-hmm. And because it's called the Common Market or something like that. And so I was like, okay. And I was like, this is like interior design, right?
She goes,
oh yeah, it is. And so, but she said, you have to get into architecture school and then you apply for that program. I said, okay, done. And Auburn always appealed to me. It was kind of a thing. My sister went and I knew it would be different. And they had study abroad programs. They had a design build program. And that appealed to me, all these extracurriculars. And I've always been into extracurriculars.
Were you looking for a college that has a really confusing mascot? Was that something?
It's not confusing.
Auburn Tigers, War Eagle.
Okay. Do we need to get off topic again?
No.
War Eagle is it's a war cry. It's a war cry.
But you fly
it's
an
a
eagle.
Tradition.
But you fly a bird in the stadium.
Well, nobody talks about Alabama.
Roll Tide and an elephant. Look, I've got the same problem.
Red water. red water. It's like Kool-Aid. No, that's an offense to Kool-Aid.
Awesome.
It's all in good fun.
Yeah.
But no, it's not. It's very serious. There's more people who take it seriously than they do take.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I keep getting off track. So I was like, okay, let's do it. Okay. Interior architecture. No idea really what I was doing.
Fair enough.
So I'm just, so I see that goal and I'm just doing what I need to do to make that process work. So I get to Auburn and I'm like, oh, this architecture thing, it's kind of scary, very intimidating. There are about 400 people that were just fighting for a chance to get into a class of, I think it was like 30 or 40 people.
Okay.
And so what you do is you can either be accepted early into the program right away, which the super smart, talented people do, or you just battle it out like Hunger Games. And so that's what I did. And I was very intimidated. And I remember a counselor there said, hey, if it's not for you, you can do building sciences, which is like being a general contractor or somewhere on that side of the industry. You can do that. And you'll get a minority scholarship for being a woman. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, that's appealing.
I'll take the easy route. I mean, it wasn't easy though. Building sciences is not easy. I was just saying I would dodge that intimidation factor.
Yeah.
A school that would accept me because I was paying the bill.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, I called my dad, said, hey dad, guess what? So excited. And my dad, he worked construction to pay for college and he's always been handy. So I thought he'd be excited. Mm-hmm. Right. No. He said, Christine, interior design are for hobbyists, which is wrong. It's not. He was thinking interior decorating.
Well, he's orderly minded.
And he's orderly minded. Don't forget, this is the colonel. And he's also looking out for my best interest. You know, he wants me to aim high and see where I land. And so he said, no, interior designer for hobbyists. And that's a nice way of putting it for him. And then also a politically correct way of putting it.
Yeah.
I think he said like house or for housewives. And then... yes. And then he goes, and anybody can be a contractor, Christine. And to an extent, being an adult, yeah, anybody can do anything, sure. But what he was really getting at is he's saying, you're scared. Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you want to do this? Do it. Don't be scared.
Yeah.
This is the easy route. Don't change gears because you're afraid. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll do it.
Yeah.
If I don't get in, then I'll figure out what I'm doing. And you go through like a year of college, and you don't really miss, you work on your core courses and everything. Mm-hmm. And so somehow I got in. I remember one of the introductory classes, you had to pass it to get in. And you had to draw one sketch every single day for the entire semester, weekends included. Actually it's a whole year, every day, weekends, holidays, all that one sketch. And I remember I was behind and, sorry about that. I was behind and I was crying because you work so hard and like all this stress and college is stressful too.
Yeah.
And I was just crying and I went up to the professor's office. I go, I'm behind and I'm not going to catch up. And he looked at me, the sweetest man, he's Turkish. And that helps because he's such a nice man and that culture is so kind. And he goes, just do it. And I feel like everybody at this point in my life just kept saying, just do it.
Yeah.
He goes, how many hours are in a day? And this is where people say architecture is architorture. He goes, how many hours are in the day? I go, 24. He goes, how many minutes are in an hour? And he broke all that down. He goes, how many drawings do you think you can get done by tomorrow at 5 o'clock? And at that point, my mind was blown.
Yeah.
At that point, the world was my oyster.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just went for it. And yeah. I sat down, my roommates just fed me. And I, God bless them. I just sat there and I knocked them out. And I'll never forget that. And the impact it had on the people around me was impressive too. Because at that point, people were like, oh, wow, she's taking this seriously. And
yeah. And
it kind of had like this domino effect on other people. And so it was really inspiring. And I got it done. By sheer luck and actually helped other people, which you're not supposed to do, but I helped other people finish their books and we got in and it was just an awesome program. And I think a lot of people have doubts even when they're in the architecture program, is this what I want to do? Mm-hmm. Because it is, we talked about this a little bit. It is such a multifaceted profession and there's a lot you can do with it. I have friends right now who are just like, screw it. I'm an artist, or screw it, you know, like I want to be on the construction side to do project management,
yeah.
Graphic designers, watercolorists, super, video game designers.
Really?
Yeah. I have a friend who also it's his passion to get into that. I hope it still is because he's very talented. But he wants to get into, he loves 3D modeling. I'm sorry. I hope she's not. I'm trying to hold her away from the bike. Okay. But she's just our social butterfly. But he his aspirations are to design the scenes and sets for video games.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I could see how he could have a talent for that, you know, with that with that degree. It's, you know, especially being able to kind of manifest something in the games that's more realistic and practically realistic, you know?
Well, and that's why a lot of them are very impressive. When I was heavily involved. Let me bring the bottle back.
Okay.
I was involved with the American Institute for Architects, which is another activist group. I'm not an activist. I wouldn't say that, but
it's got such a negative tone for some reason these days. But
well, for me, I think it's negative because I don't like people. I feel like they whine a lot, but I mean, they're doing it for good causes. But people sometimes that typology, the stereotype, it annoys me.
Yeah,
because everybody thinks they have an opinion. Everybody needs something.
Yeah. Like,
but I was in it to meet people, honestly, mm-hmm. and to feel inspired. And I actually did a lot of good along the way that I didn't expect. But yeah, so the American Institute of Architects is an institute for architects, and it's a lobbying and activist group, and they also help manage improving the profession with contract documents and all that fun stuff. But I got involved with that, and now I don't remember what I was saying. Where was I going? sometimes you're up all night and you just can't think with a baby on your lap.
Yeah, and sometimes you're trying to manage yourself on a podcast and handle a baby as well. So
this is my life, Brian. This is my life. What was I going with that?
Well, you were talking about you were with another advocacy group, and they were.
Oh, yeah. Where was I? Oh, yes. I was going with that. Blah, blah. Oh. So some of these games, I am not a gamer. I loved a good Nintendo and a Game Boy. Always had that. But I got lost after Nintendo 64. so it's been a while, but, there was, Assassin's Creed.
Uh-huh.
There was a panel discussion on that during a national conference, architectural conference.
Mm-hmm.
So those things really do cross lines a lot.
Yeah, I can see that.
And architects were kind of fighting for our place in the world because it's been lost a lot. People think we're a luxury, not a necessity. And I, you know, as an average person, I can agree to that to some extent, especially if you can have your home put together by just a contractor and yourself. Sure. Yeah. You know, what's the importance? But that could be a whole nother episode.
It seems to me though that you know, when it comes to a lot of the new construction that comes out, me and my wife were talking about this.
Are we going down this path?
What's that?
Are we going down this path?
If you want to.
Okay.
But
I'm game.
We were talking about kind of the homes. They all seem to be the same thing. You know, it's mass manufacturing of homes. And it's really a mass manufacturing of a sort of artistic ideal. You know, this like farmhouse or craftsman or whatever you want to call it, you know? So it's, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, in a perfect world, we're talking Walgreens here, I hate it. But it's unrealistic with our population, with our diversity in economics. It's just not. I want everybody to have a sturdy home. Bottom line, I want everybody to have a quality home that excites them, that captivates them, that makes them feel like they're home and they're safe. You want all those things. But it's not realistic, and thankfully, homes are available for many people, and we should be grateful for that. And they're not always going to be the best quality, simply because of the resources we have aren't like what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting here in a home built in the 70s because I chose it.
Yeah,
because I wanted a home that was honestly 70s or older.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just because, you know, old homes are cute, because they are.
Yeah.
And we don't know why. Mm-hmm. But they just invoke something special and nostalgic for people. But but because I know it's sturdy. I went through many homes and neighborhoods that I grew up envying, and I just walked around and I thought, gosh, it feels like it's just going to fall down. It feels like a treehouse. Like there's just not, and not in a good way because I love treehouses. I'm going to build one day. But yeah, I know there's not one back there.
Well, you got a big tree out there.
We've got the opportunity for sure. I know I want to build like a cabin in North Alabama. I'm going to build one that's actually a treehouse. So like treehouse for adults.
There you go. There you go.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
It's a dream. But anyway, we'll get down that another time. But it just, there's a lack of quality, and that's what bothers me the most. The styles, it's all up to you. However you want your home, sure. Of course, I'm going to want to tell you how you want your home.
Yeah.
That's the architect in me.
Yeah.
I want to be like, no, you want this. You don't want that. But that's my job. You know what I mean? That's what you pay me to do. So I have to look at everything with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. And I've learned as I've gotten older that I can only criticize. I can't even criticize method because everybody's different. It's you just got to be mindful. And if there's something, okay, let me give you an example.
Okay.
Let me circle back. I can't go in a public bathroom without seeing if the grout lines and the tiles line up.
It actually bothers me too.
Oh, thank God.
It does bother me too. And, or if I can tell that somebody, when they laid the tile,
just weren't thinking,
they just eyeballed it and didn't put the spacers in.
Right.
Or didn't check the corners to make sure they're level. Like all you got to do is press that down in the mortar, you know? So, one thing I wanted to ask you, me and the wife were talking about like the surge in new construction. And, I view new construction as a problem from the lens of mostly dealing with like military people, because they build these homes that a military person can afford, but they're not going to live in long enough to develop the equity to be able to like sell it. And pretty much everybody I know, that has bought a house that's been in the military, they've lost money on it. I've never lost money on a house, but I've never bought new. They'll buy new and whatnot. Well, and so
it's like a car.
Yeah. And so my wife brought up a good point, and she said, well, if you buy an older house, it's going to cost you $10,000 or $20,000 to get it to look the way you want, with in that kind of look inside with, you know, again, I'm a dummy with these things. So
no, you're not.
So bear with me, but the sort of interior farmhouse kind of look, you know, all the moldings and whatnot, it's going to cost money, the quartz countertops, whatever. But in a new construction, it's much, on the surface, it's much cheaper because it's just built into the loan. It's already there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's certainly more appealing. So the demand is that. I would also probably say the endeavor you're taking on, redoing this house, right, comes from your ability to do these things. But somebody who buys a home.
Yeah, I can see that.
Most people in their 20s, early 20s, like I was pretty mechanically sound at that age, you know.
Yeah.
So it never scared me, any problems that might come up. But I think that there's a bit of a deterrence there that exists with people buying.
Scared of the unknown.
Scared of the unknown. And so they think like, okay, well, if I buy a home that's brand new, I won't have to deal with those issues for the foreseeable future.
Oh, and I think that too sometimes. You know, yeah. I wasn't supposed to do this. I almost lost Anson because we just moved here from a 100-year-old home.
Right.
And it's still to this day is like my dream home. I love that home. It'll always have a special place in my heart, especially the people who grew up there too, because I know it's special to them. And it's just having that patchwork quilt of life is just an awesome home. But Anson said, can we just move somewhere and just live there? Can we live in a house and do other things and have fun? And I just thought, I was like, wow, I'm really kind of screwing this guy up. Like, this poor guy, why did I bring him into this circus? But because like I said earlier, I've been doing this, I've been rearranging my room my whole life. And so it's, I forgot where I was going again, but I wasn't supposed to do this, but you hit the nail on the head. It's because I know these things. I know it's there. And I know if you do it yourself, if you coordinate yourself, it is cheaper.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to be smart and methodical. Mm-hmm. You got to have a plan. Right, and unfortunately, our plan's gone to shit because my house hasn't sold. And so right now I have two houses. But it's, you know, you got to have a plan, bottom line. And once you have that plan, it's totally achievable. We have YouTube and Google. And as long as you make sure that you aren't going to get sued over it, you know, make sure you've got the legal boundaries.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Or you know somebody who could give you that sort of advice. Like, hey, look, I know you're at this point. Now yes. Stop and get into
it. Vital. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. My gosh. If you can find somebody who's willing to teach you these things.
Yeah. Or just stop in once a week and see how you're doing. Man, if I was doing something that I didn't know how to do, I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to, but I've found ways around it. I've wanted to, like, go work for somebody who did a particular job that I needed done. Like, it's probably going to be roof the next thing. I might go work with a roofer, which is a terrible.
I want to do masonry.
Masonry.
Bricks. Yes. Okay.
But yeah, so, something like that. Like learn how to do it and then do it myself, you know, because it's.
And then pass that along too.
Yeah. And me and Foad talked about this. There's something about, like, learning from somebody else and, you know, teaching and passing that on. And, you know, it's got value that, like, that transcends the project.
Yeah.
Because now you know how to do it. I mean, there was one time I bought a car for $100. A guy had had jumped it backwards, positive to negative, negative to positive. So he reversed the polarity on it, which fried the computer. Mm-hmm. So in about 4 hours, I got the car running. Oh, my God. Now, what I did, and when I sold it for $1,100, I told him exactly what I did. The computer's $300. You can find it on eBay right here. He was like, why don't you just do it? I was like, because I'm going to make like $1,000 right here. You know, right. And why? I'm going to make $1,000 because I know how to read a schematic.
Right.
That's it. Like, there's nothing else to it. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's that experience of knowing how to do that, read a wiring diagram, that made me money. And knowing how to do these things saves you money in the long run.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about risk earlier too. And that, so I worked for two firms after I graduated college. And both of them taught me some pretty big lessons. And, you know, I probably would have continued down that firm culture if I hadn't desired to be a mom. And one of the things that appealed to me with architecture is I know people who are architects and they work from home. That it's a something that you can almost have, like a trade that you can produce from home from nothing. You know, it's almost like a survival tactic, which I will go down that path. I'll let Anson talk about apocalyptic preparation and all that. But it is something, a skill that you can learn and you can use, and I can always go back to. And so what, talking about risks and doing things unknown, if it wasn't for that second firm I worked for, and I'll say it, it's KPS Group, because they and I'll say Fuquay & Partners was my first place too, because they taught me a lot. But it was a pivotal moment at KPS Group when it was a very small group of people doing really big things. And when that happens, you all of a sudden get a lot of responsibility. And at that point in my life, I wanted to work. I wanted to be at work. I was single. I didn't have a dog or anything. I just wanted to work and soak up like a sponge. And I was a project manager, and I wasn't even 30 yet. I knew people who were working in big firms, and they were still designing restrooms. They were drawing toilets for a living. And I was here in front of the customer bringing in new business. I was, you know, doing things that maybe I shouldn't have been doing. But it got me to this level of knowledge that anything can be learned.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you just got to take that little jump, if you just do it, like people were telling me while I was in college, just do it. And so I got pregnant. Well, first of all, I got married. Let's clear the timeline here. I was married. I did it right. I mean, Anson and I were living together before we got married. But I got married. A few months later, I found out I was pregnant with our first son, Theodore. And at that point, I said, do I know enough to be able to work from home? Because as a female, you got to think about maternity leave. Am I coming back? Because that's their first thought. The best hire is a single young guy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Because he has no ties and he won't get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I've avoided getting pregnant for so many years.
Good for you.
You know, I'm very successful. If anybody needs advice, I can tell you.
Very good. Very good. Because it does throw things off. You double in size, and then you split in half. Okay. So, but yeah, so I had to think about that. And I loved this firm. My boss was a wonderful woman. Her name was Christine, too, so I'm biased. But she was such a mentor. And at that point, she said, you just got to decide what you want to do, what's right for you. And I thought about that, and I was like, you know what? I don't think this is going to work. She said, then try it, and we'll give you some work as a consultant. See how it goes. So, completely unknown. It would be like somebody buying an old house and saying, wait, we're going to renovate this. Where do I start? And I just started with, luckily I had some loyal clients, and they're still with me today. Even I moved across the border.
So they basically created a job for you.
I saw the opportunity there. And they kind of created this independent consultation thing that didn't last long with them because it wasn't going to work. They weren't making any money off of consulting out to me. And I didn't enjoy it. The point of me going off was to be able to be there for my kids, but also run things the way I think they need to be ran. I don't like turning away work because I won't make too much money on it.
Gotcha.
And with a firm, with that overhead, you have to think that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's why I'm a terrible businesswoman.
Well, plus, I mean,
because I'm like, I'm not working on this project enough. I'm not doing this client justice. I'm discounting his rate. Terrible business. Terrible business. But, you know, I'm not in it for the business. I'm really not. And that's where the artist comes in me. You know, I would do it all for free if I could.
Yeah.
But I do need to pay bills.
Right, right. That's fair. You know?
It is fair, but I mean, things are scary, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know everything, because I don't. But shut up! I'm just kidding. She looked at, oh my God, I'm a terrible mother. Oh, she's smiling. I know. I'm coming to get you. But you know, the opportunities are there. You just, like you said, find somebody who can be a shoulder to prop you up, or YouTube, Google, podcasts.
Yeah.
Podcasts are great for my mental state. I will shamefully admit that I've listened to Rachel Hollis a lot, especially during, she's a life coach kind of a person. She's good for people who are balancing too much. She kind of gives you a breath of fresh air and things that you know you should be doing, but she kind of reminds you. So, but I probably should tame the beast.
Okay, sure. All right. So, you know, with these breaks also, like we can transition as well. I kind of forget at this point what we're talking about, but it was on the line of new homes.
Yeah. I like talking about that because I think it really speaks for people today.
Okay.
I think people might be interested in that.
Yeah.
Like I know what they want.
Okay. And I think the last thing we were talking about was like, the sort of DIY aspect of things. Now you've done a lot about it. A lot of DIY and pretty major construction type of things. Why are you so comfortable with that?
I'm not.
Okay.
Every project scares me. But I like the satisfaction. In my profession, you have to wait a long time to see your stuff come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And I am in the market where I do quick projects. I work mainly for a commercial real estate and lease management company. And so with a lot of the business in Huntsville, they rent their properties for work. And I've done a lot of work for major companies and small startups. And they want to get in their spaces quick because it's all about the contract.
Sure.
So, but it's not sexy work. It's not sexy architecture by any means. It's office space. And sometimes they're cool. I did something for Northrop Grumman, and that was, I mean, they're always willing to compete with Boeing, and super competitive. And these, I did something for a podcast group. And then, you know, some of them get pretty fun, But the biggest thing is I want that instant gratification, you know, like, oh yeah, I broke a pee trap underneath the sink in my master bathroom. I was supposed to just replace the fixture, the faucet, because ours was leaking. I was like, I'll just go ahead and replace it. Of course, now I got to replace everything. And it broke off in my hand, but so I'm hoping it doesn't get infected. But I mean, every project's scary, but it's that satisfaction of like, yeah, that's done. I did it. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
well, I think there's something primal about that, right? I mean, you know, making something out of just transformation in general, like we're enamored by human transformation when people lose a bunch of weight or when people go from
being... Yeah, tell me how to do that.
shit, I wish I knew.
It's easy to do. You know how to do it, it's just not easy.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. You know, working in the bank, some of the financial advice I would give to young people is I'd say, just like counting calories, if by virtue of just tracking the money that you spend, you'll spend less money. So that's just true. By virtue of tracking the calories, you'll consume less calories because you'll feel guilty, you know. But I know that.
But so you don't do it.
I refuse. If I get on a health kick, right? If I get on a diet, I will almost never count calories. I don't like it because I just like consuming. Yeah. But I know that's probably the big difference maker.
Eat right, exercise more.
Yeah.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. But anyways.
But yeah, I just think there's something primal to being able to transform something and like, you know, what you're doing here is, well, you're still rearranging your furniture in your room.
I am. Just on a much bigger, more dangerous scale. Yeah. It's an impulse. I mean, everywhere I go, I try and figure out how I can make the space better. And I love it. I just wish it was done.
Yeah.
and a lot of that is, you know, you're talking about money. I mean, we don't want to get down a rat race. And so we got to be patient. And then it'll all turn out. But I'm excited, you know.
Yeah.
I like things. Another thing is I like things done my way.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. I mean, that's why I'm an architect.
That's probably why you can also say, no, this is what you actually want.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm really good at that. No, and to an extent, sometimes that's true. But you got to boil down to the question. That's a good thing that maybe people need to hear. I'm working for my parents right now. I'm doing a renovation for them. And that brings in all of the complications and nuances that you would expect. I know what I want for them. And I'm thinking as their daughter too, I want it accessible and I want them to age well in the home. And a lot of that's not true, you know, for them, you know, I want to open up a doorway and they're like, no, we can get through it. And I'm like, well, if you're in a wheelchair, maybe you won't. But you know, it's little things like that. You got to ask the question, okay, how are you going to use this? What do you do daily? Kitchens are the biggest thing, you know. I've learned that being in the residential world, saying, you know, well, when you're in the kitchen, where are you? My mom says, oh, well, you know, I'm here at this little island. I'm sitting here. My mom makes all kinds of things. I'm rolling up egg rolls or I'm canning. So she does a lot of preparatory work. I'm like, well, then why are you putting your stovetop in your island? It's just going to take up space. I was like, let's move this aside. And let's give you your island here where you can see the TV.
Right. Yeah.
You know, where she can watch her soap operas and the Saints games. And you know, it's questions like that. But then she circled back, you know, so I thought we were on that track. And then she circled back and said, no, I changed my mind. I want the range and the island. I was like, okay, let's do that. But you really got to think about how you're going to use these things. And that drives, it really does. Otherwise, you know, you move into these new homes, which are nice, don't get me wrong, but does it fit your lifestyle? Is it a temporary thing? Is it just another box?
Well, I think of, you know, again, I work in trades, right? And so, you know, having a well-designed space for your workflow is super important. You know, I think back to like when I've told this story before, but there was a factory that transitioned from steam powered machines to electric machines.
Oh my gosh.
And so because of steam, you had to co-locate machines that weren't necessarily related.
That's my dishwasher.
Oh, okay.
I too was like, yeah. Wait, because you can hear everything in these.
Yeah, so you had these big industrial cast iron pipes, and so all the machines had to be located near it. But they weren't necessarily the right machines for the workflow. Like, you still might have to move something to another side of the floor. But with electricity, you could design a workplace and then just drop much cheaper electrical lines, and you could have a well-designed workplace. And some people saw, like, exponential increases in, you know, work efficiency, you know.
Well, and you can see that now, too, with the wireless networking now. Because I've been doing office spaces for a long time now. Well, not a long time. I mean, I'll probably be doing it for a long time. But as far as the amount of work I do, majority of it is office space. And a lot of those spaces used to have telephone rooms, networking rooms, and then you had to locate those in certain spots. And a lot of my clients are engineering, software engineering. It's very, such cool stuff. I really can't let go of that market because people are so fascinating. Mm-hmm. Flying drones from their cubicles. It's, oh my goodness. it's such an adrenaline rush.
I think you're when you walk, out right now.
it's such an adrenaline rush when you walk into a space you know you're not supposed to be in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the rooms are real dark and there's like little cartoon figurines on top of the workstations. Mm-hmm. That's the given. That's the given. When there's like two or three monitors at a desk and the lights are real dim and there's like comic books. Oh yeah. It's just like Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
My husband and I watch that because it's so, so true. But, coolest people ever. Not smart enough to hang around them, but they think I'm smart because I'm doing things they don't know.
Right.
So I'm like, yes. But, anyways, yeah. So the workspace has changed drastically. And there was this big move to have like the Google office where everything's open space and, you know, you work on the couch or you work, you know, outside. And there's a lot of companies who find that successful.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot that tried it and regret it.
Yeah.
Because people are diverse, not even the millennial generation, Gen X, Gen Y, they're all the boomers. They're all so different. And honestly, I see the boomer generation pushing the open office scheme more than anybody. And I don't know if it's just competing with
younger companies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's got to be diverse. And it's interesting how seeing that shift.
Yeah.
So the trends in workspace are a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, I think the one that comes to mind, it's either, I think it's DreamWorks, but they have all the offices, all the cubicles on the perimeter.
That's something I definitely push.
Of the floor. And then you have like your bathrooms, you have your eating areas in the middle. So you get that cross connection. And it seems to me that those sort of open space areas are more for creative jobs.
Yeah. There's a huge difference between an office of profession, such as an attorney's office, and we'll say spaces that require a lot of collaboration, like a company like Northrop Grumman, where there's teams and then there's management, you know, there's that traditional scheme. And then you got to think about privacy. You know, an attorney needs privacy.
Yeah.
You don't want to walk in your office like, okay, here's my cubicle. Hey, that's Joe and Sally.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about them. They can't hear you.
Yeah.
You don't want that when you want to talk about, you know, child custody or anything like that. Yeah. So, but when you go into a space and you know that they are producing, let's say they're building Blackhawks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to walk into a room and there's like stuff pinned to the walls and like there's people excited with pencils sticking in their hair and they're, you know, you want to hear excitement. And so, it's interesting seeing that. And I get really excited when people come to me and say, our space isn't working for us. We need your help. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm going to help this company, these people perform better. I'm going to make their daily lives better. Cause I mean, how much time do you spend? And it's not even 9 to 5 anymore. It's 8 to 5 or 6 to 6.
Yeah.
How much time do you really spend at that desk?
Yeah.
You know? And so it just gets me excited that I can make spaces that will inspire people and hopefully enjoy it a little bit more.
Well, people have to, I mean, designing a workplace or a space to have, I guess, the look of being productive, and if it yields production is great, but sort of what you're doing is you're evoking a spirit as well, right? Like, mm-hmm. like you kind of, when I look at a Boeing building or Northrop Grumman, Lockheed, whatever, they're evoking a spirit in their architecture. And sometimes for these legacy companies like Lockheed, uh-huh. you know, how do you capture that legacy? What's that process like? I mean, because you kind of have to see, it's this weird thing where you're trying to see their mind's eye, mm-hmm. you know, for maybe what they want. And maybe they don't even know. But you have to somehow encapsulate that.
Oh, yeah.
And blend that into the design. And
How do you start something from nothing kind of a deal?
Again, just capturing the soul and spirit of it. You know, if you're building Blackhawks, you need to capture the soul and spirit of the missions of Blackhawks.
Right. Exactly. You got it. But it's translating that into something tangible, I guess. It just comes from many sources, and every inspiration's different. I do a lot of renovation work, and mm-hmm. that kind of gets you a parameter, if you will, to get started. And then from that space, a lot of people aren't doing, sometimes they'll want to add windows or they'll want to change something to the exterior. I've done many new construction before I went off and started my own business, because that takes a lot of manpower. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, I don't want to give away my secrets.
No, it's fine.
You know, I don't want to give away the secret ingredient. But first of all, you meet the people, you talk to them. Sometimes you don't get to know what they do. I had a project, what did we call it? Project Fire, I think it was called. I still to this day don't know who they were. I did know one time that I was designing a space for Google, but I didn't know it at the time. Mm. It was a temporary office for them. But I mean, that's the hard one. But at that point, they just want clean carpet and, yeah. you know, walls, and that's it.
Sure.
But you know, you get to know the people. Usually if they like you, you get a tour, and mm-hmm. that's when you get to see the cool stuff.
Yeah.
And really it just, you start with the practical, and then you try and find ways to make it, jazz it up. One of my favorite projects is one of the smallest things I've ever done. It was a lobby for a classified building for Northrop Grumman. They needed a lobby space that would wow the big guys coming in.
Okay.
And, you know, coming from a military background, all of a sudden I'm like getting nervous, like, oh my gosh, I got to impress these people mm-hmm. with my work.
Yeah.
They said, you know, this is it. And it was like, I don't know how many people have been on a military base, but it was like walking into military bases the way they were 20 years ago, mm-hmm. like tan, dirty, dingy, dark.
Yeah.
Depressing.
Very utilitarian.
Utilitarian. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I need four walls and a roof.
Yeah. Oh, okay, hey, there's a couple rolls of carpet on for sale at that big house place. Yeah, let's grab that. Like government, you know? And so I was like, gosh, they need something better than this. And of course, you know, I'll say it again, they're competing mm-hmm. with these other major companies for the young blood. And I was like, how am I going to do this? I mean, literally the worst lobby space you could ask for. It could have been like a dorm room lobby. And I walk, and of course I meet the woman who put it together. And she's like, this was a good idea when I did it, and now it's horrible. And so, I'm sorry, I'm going to get to the point.
No, you're good.
So I was like, okay, well, I was like, what are you looking for? And she goes, we need something light and bright, and we need to compete. She said, I've got some pictures for you. And that's always the best, is when they give you information of what they want. And it was polar opposite. White walls, big windows, people hang, almost like a cafe. You know, she wanted the Google, the Silicon Valley look. I was like, okay, I'll see what I can do. The facilities management guy, still a good friend to this day. He's military as well. He's in the Army. He did trajectory. And he said, just go out there and I'll pull you back. Okay, that's intimidating. To a creative person, that means they're expecting something big.
I've discovered this. I've reached out to people for graphics design work for various projects I've done, and I've learned that what I am trying to do is give space. Like I don't want to restrict the artist, but so I say, look, this is kind of how it feels, whatever. I'd like to include X, Y, and Z, and then I'd like you to surprise me. And oftentimes I end up getting to the point where I have to kind of say, okay, look, this is exactly what I want, and then I get something better. But I've always kind of thought, like, maybe you shouldn't restrict the artist, but it sounds like restrictions creates the parameters for which they can operate within, you know? So I've moved on to, like, this is what I absolutely do want, this is what I absolutely don't want. Surprise me in the middle of that, you know? But
yeah. Well, the good thing is it turned out great.
Oh, good.
It's the coolest thing I've ever. And it really kind of gave me that confidence I needed very early in my career.
Yeah.
And I guess I could describe it, but we did add some extra windows. There was a variety of seating options. And I don't know if you're familiar with Northrop Grumman's branding, but they've got this jet stream.
Yep. Yep.
I saw the jet stream. I said, I got to do something with that. Mm-hmm. But it can't just be on the wall, you know. So there's this acrylic. I don't know how nerdy you want to get. But there's this acrylic paneling, and it's clear on the top, but you can do like a film on the bottom. Mm. So it has this cool three-dimensional feeling to it. I put it in the floor. So from if you're looking at the space from left to right, this swoosh, like a Nike swoosh upside down, it's in the floor. This cobalt blue, Northrop Grumman blue, is in the floor, this line, and it comes up, forms a bench, goes back down, comes up, forms the reception desk, which is really a guard desk, and then back down and shoots down the hallway. And
that's pretty rad.
It was so cool. And on the opposite side, far away from you, it was this kind of black and gray and blue, really kind of hotel feeling. They call it hospitality style. Mm-hmm. Carpeting. So it was fun. It said, come sit down and hang out. And then there was like a vinyl wood flooring, because you want the vinyl, the durability of that. And so it was a clean and professional space, but it was fun.
Yeah.
And it said, like, in with a confidential, with a classified building, there's a lot of intimidation that goes in there.
Sure.
And a lot of monotony for the people who work there. And the guests that come in, they want to be impressed, so they have security in their investments.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go in there, I'm just so proud, again, of the feeling you get, which is why I do it all. So you get in there and you go, this isn't so bad. I want to go sit over there.
It's interesting you talk about the feeling of these things. Do you feel other forms of like artwork or creativity?
Yeah. I used to not cry much, but as a mom, my hormones all over the place. But yeah, I can't watch scary movies because my emotions get too strong. Yeah. But yeah, I feel things big time. I guess that is the artist in me.
Yeah.
As I'm speaking, my daughter's feeling frustrated. Mom! But yeah, no, I try, but that comes from trying to see where people's perspective. I don't appreciate very abstract art. I don't understand it. I think that's what it comes from. Mm. But if I look at something, like I have
You're probably less Picasso, more Monet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I have this landscape in my kitchen. My kitchen is anything but a kitchen at this point. But I have that hanging on the wall because it really invokes this peace, like serenity and peace for me. Uh-huh. And it's a mountainscape. It's painted by a German. I found it. I love antiquing. Mm-hmm. My parents and I, we love picking and antiquing and going to estate sales.
Yeah.
And I found that one and it just spoke to me. It's kind of a dramatic, over-the-top version of Northeast Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep talking about that place, but it really is beautiful. If you've never been to...
Well,
I can't even think. Gunnersville.
Okay,
I can spit it out. Like, Gunnersville is just beautiful, and that area is just so nice.
We've been trying to get up to North Georgia for a while.
Yeah, North Georgia is very similar. So if,
yeah, exactly.
The foothills of Appalachians.
Yeah,
gorgeous.
And we want to go... Have you ever been to Helen, Georgia?
No, but my husband has. He went on a boys' trip. But we go somewhere similar every year.
I would imagine that would be fun for y'all because, you know, it's this Bavarian German town they do an Oktoberfest as well. So I think about, you know, the kind of challenge that being an architect might have with trying to kind of feel the vision of you know, what somebody wants and say a home or whatever, because I know you're working on some residential homes and
mm-hmm.
and whatnot. So
yeah, and that's interesting too. I find that I hear you. My expectations of that have been interesting, and I think I'm going to take another route with that too. I'm just kind of speaking it as I'm thinking it, but. Residential requires a lot of time that is different than doing commercial. And I would love to do custom homes just because I want people to have a custom home.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's this big, magical, glorious thing that only the rich and the famous can have. I think anybody can. So I'm trying to make that feasible, not just for the clientele, but for me too, because it requires a lot of time because I can't do things half-ass. Sometimes they may turn out that way, but it's, you know, you can't do everything to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to providing for others, I think it's important. And I'm thinking about, I kind of want to do like a plan book, but in the sense of what they used to do back in the day where it was...
First of all, what's a plan book?
A plan book is a book full of plans.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it's like the Sears and Roebuck catalog. It's like when you go to coolhouseplans.com.
Gotcha.
There is a coolhouseplans.com. But or Southern Living magazine has their own collections. There's other architects who do this as well. They sell Cowart. I believe he sells some of his home plans online. But I was thinking about being my own client. And that kind of plays into the ego that I have that I know what's right for you.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about making a collection of homes and that people could purchase and then customize further if they wanted to. But at that point, you're not paying for my time that's current and progressing. You're paying for time spent.
Yeah.
But also it could be at a lower level because I'm producing more than one of these things.
Yeah.
I'm creating a product at that point.
Yeah, there's definitely sunk cost in that.
Right. So it's somewhere a bridge between this new construction thing we were talking about, how it's so cookie cutter and they just mass produce them. Somewhere in the middle there where you have a level of control before that thing creates. But you also don't need me involved. I would love to be involved. Like, let's go shopping. let's do it. But and I'm struggling with that too on the project management side of these because it's so different from commercial. How involved do you want me to be? Because I know in the back of your head thinking, I'm paying you for this. You know, so I try and keep that limited, but it doesn't always work. And she's...
Look.
She's really struggling.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we can wrap this up.
Okay.
You know? So, Christine, thanks for talking, you know?
Hey, yeah. You too, Laurel.
Had a blast. Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
Laurel, thanks for your contribution.
Absolutely, absolutely. Everybody involved. The dog was a great player, too.
So. You know, and I thought he was going to be the problem. I thought I was going to be the problem. We'll see.
But yeah, it was great talking to you. Do you want to give out your business or any kind of information for people to get in touch with you? Or?
Sure. I have a mediocre website. It's CF, it's Charlie Foxtrot, Walk, WALCK.com. So okay. CFWalk.com. You can find me on Facebook. I have an Instagram too. Best way to get a hold of me is probably through, God, I don't know, probably my email.
I gotcha.
I'm kind of a old school like that.
it's funny that's old
not
school.
Not my house phone. Yeah, and I was thinking maybe the boomer thing would be the house phone. But yeah, my email is simple. It's christine@cfwalk.com.
Okay.
So get a hold of me and see what we're up to, and I'll tame her, but we'll make her happy.
We'll put all this information on the website as well. So again, Christine, thanks for spending time with me today.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. See ya. Everybody, thanks again for listening. As always, we appreciate the support from each and every one of you. If you found value in this episode or you just enjoyed the entertainment, feel free to give us a review and a rating. Also, don't forget to subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast. Check out our website at shopandchivalry.com where we have links to our episodes, a blog, pictures, and other media, and also a way to get in contact with us. Shoot us an email or a message if you would like to be on the show. Finally, follow us on Facebook at The Shop and Chivalry Podcast, Instagram, Shop and Chivalry, and Twitter @ Shop and Chivalry. Thanks again, everybody. See ya.